They won't build no schools anymore. All they build will be prison, prison. They won't build no schools anymore. All they build will be prison, prison.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli, and today we're here with Tag. Hey, how you doing, Tag?
Peace. How's it doing, fam? Great to be in discussion with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. You have a very amazing and broad background of community organizing. Tell us how you got involved with things and what kind of projects are you working on these days?
Let's see. As far as starting out, I would say I'm from Harlem, and much of how I orient toward organizing and community definitely derives from that upbringing in Harlem. And it was in Harlem that I eventually basically stumbled upon, among other programs and among other spaces, the Morales Shakur Center at City College. Now, I had been very interested in movement history for a grip at that point, but not in a programmatic way, in the sense that I really didn't have a clear line into how I should be relating, how I should be connecting, how to build in any concrete sort of way. When I was coming up, going through school and whatnot, middle school, high school, there just were not, even though I was in an environment, I'm coming up in the city, there are a lot of different types of experiences around me. There weren't really that many explicit organizational opportunities that I was aware of that really resonated with what it felt like the importance of that work was historically. So I didn't really feel that direct line into the movement per se, as I understood it, let's say. And then getting to the Morales Shakur Center at City College, which, just, you know, some quick background around that space. It's named after Guillermo Morales and Assata Shakur. And that space was claimed behind the takeovers that occurred at City College, which is a part of CUNY. CUNY stands for City University of New York. And so CUNY in general, and City College in particular, have an illustrious history of struggle on a community basis around things like Black studies programs, Puerto Rican studies programs, Asian studies programs, and really just that community engagement in not only Heads' own education, but access to those spaces. Open CUNY was a major struggle around, at one time, CUNY, the entire system, as far as I recognize it, was essentially free for students to attend. And, you know, as with much of this history in terms of the history of New York, the history of US, there's just a lot of racist violence and questions of access, you know, restricted access to the people and education. So there was a lot of that going on, you know, and as movement histories and activities built further, and those contradictions were further and further exposed in the context of CUNY and City College, Heads wanting to have access to, you know, these public facilities, learning and wanting to learn about information and history that's directly related to them and their communities. So that struggle intensified, and essentially the students, the community, and faculty took over the campus. And as that takeover developed, it reached more or less a standstill, and there was a negotiation with the administration. And part of the concessions to the movement and to the students and to the faculty was, here is this space that will be your space, an autonomous community student-run space on campus. And so they named it the Morales Shakur Center in honor of those freedom fighters and of the movement. So that space was pivotal for my personal development. And it was pivotal for certainly the student movement throughout New York City. And I would say organizing and movement work throughout the city in general, because the CUNY system is so embedded in the broader community of New York City. It's over two dozen different campuses throughout the boroughs, and it's public education. So many of the people throughout the city are somehow or another connected to CUNY. Heads work there, heads teach there, heads learn there. Their family may, you know, have attended those schools, et cetera. So it's, you know, just a huge portion of the population of the city. And so so much organizing was flowing out of that one relatively small space at City College. Okay, so, you know, learned a great deal about political prisoners, organizing. They had all kinds of posters there up of our freedom fighters, you know, posters that were produced by organizations like Jericho, for example, so that visually, you know, if you enter that space, you would already know at the very least that there are U.S. held political prisoners of war, for example, flying in the face of, you know, this fraudulent claim that persists to this day that the U.S. does not hold political prisoners, you know, and just being in that type of atmosphere where you're exposed to the kinds of dialogue and texts and just information and visuals that otherwise you're not necessarily seeing, certainly not in a sustained way. Okay, so that was a key space for me, and being able to relate to elders that were in that space, you know, other students that were in that space, community members, etc. You know, and so then that just generates further interest, and you end up finding out about more spaces in the city that exist, where heads are building, other organizations, etc. like this. Eventually, that space was shut down. This was around 2013, if memory serves. This would have been about 2013, where the Alphabet Boys basically vamped on the space. They raided the space, shut down the entire campus. I recall it very vividly. All of a sudden, there's just Poe everywhere, flooding the campus, dozens of NYPD cars, et cetera, and so forth. They made arrests, shut down the space. And of course, there was a huge pushback and resistance against this very repressive act. And so that became its own struggle to regain the Morale Shakur Center. And that struggle, as so many of these struggles, continues, but just on a different level and far less visibly than in those initial couple years, few years after they seized the space. All kinds of contradictions there. But, you know, that's the history and legacy of struggle, not just in the New York City public school system, but throughout. There are so many examples of that. Anyway, that's one of the key sites that I would point toward in terms of my own personal development and being able to really feel and not just see or read or hear from elders, all of which is vitally important for the mindset and for just being able to have the resources needed to move against this warscape that we're up against, but really being able to feel that, feeling, you know, what that type of repression and confusion feels like in a direct way, and seeing how the people are able to move and mobilize when need be, but also seeing the system's capacity to really just wait things out and to co-opt struggle, you know. So particularly in the student realm, where you're dealing with a relatively fleeting population, you know, students enter the school and then after a few years, oftentimes they're leaving the school. And so that question of continuity and what heads like our dear sister and comrade Ramona Africa once spoke to very vividly, the key difference between resistance and sustained resistance. And so really having that kind of movement continuity, you know, came through very clearly through that struggle. And so, yeah, from there, I mean, that I think was a real turning point for me as far as this movement work, and left a very bad taste in my mouth in terms of, you know, how deceptive, how repressive, and just how false in their posture the other side was willing to do. And by the other side, including these administrators and et cetera, were willing to be, and all of the posturing really left a bad taste in my mouth. But the solidarity that experience brought forth made it such that I felt compelled to really make sure that that was not the last of that kind of sustained movement space for me, and being able to feel that kind of camaraderie in a space.
Well, you raise a few really important points out of your story of your background and how you got involved. And a couple of things that stick out is this aspect of even education, which I know you're also an educator as well. And it's very important that we talk about, you know, so much of the history. And of course, the organizing is what I mean too, not just educating, but the organizing and how we talk about this history of colonialism, of genocide, and of imperialism, among other things. And how even the education of those topics is met with radical violence and that kind of reaction to it, even at institutions. And I won't go on about it, but with what you just mentioned too, there's so many other examples, like you mentioned with Cornell and so many schools in Portland, Oregon. You know, our Black Studies Department at Portland State initially came up because people had to occupy buildings in order just to even have that curriculum. And then fast forward, we're now again in another, I guess, another period or volume, whatever you want to call it, of this kind of Trumpian era of extreme ignorance is kind of what I would sort of like to call it, and how those things tie in. So getting back to the community organizing and how those things plug in and how those inform us are so important, and you're doing all that great work. So as far as getting involved with things, and more recently, you know, you talked about learning about these different political prisoners, you know, which of course is learning about those different movements, where they came from, and getting involved with those things. And then now you're working in tandem with many of these people who are well, they're either still locked up or several of them are out, several of them have passed away. So can you talk now about how these different kind of projects have been plugging in with these various communities?
Absolutely. And speaking of this question of ignorance, that we are in an atmosphere where ignorance is being promoted deeply in overt and covert ways. And I'm often reminded of this clip that I seen. I want to say it was from the 90s. I'm not exactly sure of the year, but it's from this brother, Paul Gilroy, you know, who's written a great deal, among other texts, you know, The Black Atlantic, which is an extraordinary text. But he's talking in this moment to a group, it seems like maybe of fellow educators at a university, but he's talking about what he terms the politics of ignorance. And it rests the way that he described this. And it dovetails for me with something that I've heard Brother Daruba bin Wahad say a few times, something to the effect of, you can never underestimate the power of a whole bunch of stupid people, is I think how I think that's how he puts it, but I don't want to misquote him, but it's something to that effect. And there's a lot to that. I mean, I think that we are sometimes encouraged to think about intellect or intelligence or information as though there's this just one-to-one relation where if you know something, those that have the accurate information, that there's just an automatic kind of facility and utility to that. And on the one hand, yes, I do believe that there is importance around just knowledge in and of itself. Having knowledge, having accurate information is vitally important. However, in and of itself, that is rarely going to be enough. It's a question of how are you enacting that knowledge? How are you enacting that information? And so ignorance can also be mobilized in very important ways, and it is being mobilized in key ways. So I just want to make that note, because information in and of itself is being weaponized in sophisticated ways right now in 2024. And information is often weaponized in sophisticated ways, but it can be much more difficult to detect how the information is being weaponized these days, given the technologies that are being used, given that it's often difficult to even trace the sources of the information that we are getting at present. I mentioned some of that because these freedom fighters that you speak to, that you're speaking of, and that we're talking about, the elders that we're talking about, political prisoners, prisoners of war, there's a kind of knowledge, experiential knowledge, through having to face direct the innermost belly of this beast. There is a deep knowledge that is accrued there, that this system is hell-bent on divorcing the rest of us from. And this is part and parcel of why they not only incarcerate these individuals and collectives, but they do everything that they can to over further incarcerate them within the furthermost recesses of this plantation system that the U.S. has built over all this time. And so that has the effect of at least making that much more difficult, increasing the barriers that exist between the rest of us and that vital information that would in fact facilitate our liberation. And that's why they do it. I mean, so just thinking about it tactically like that, they have very effective means of manipulating the information space overall, making it seem as though the information that we most need is coming from the same system that is in fact severing us from that vital connection that we need to our movement histories and to that intergenerational transmission of that history and the information. And so that's what it is for me personally, coming up into this work and recognizing that no movement is going to go far without its political prisoners, those that have made the ultimate sacrifice for that movement, being foregrounded in key ways. And for us to foreground those that represent the tip of the spear, for us to foreground that crucial element of the work, we have to have access to their voices, to their wisdom, to their experience. And this system does everything that it can to sever us from that, including through mis and disinformation, distortion, etc. So we're up against a full court press when it comes to knowledge production. And again, what Paul Gilroy once referred to as the politics of ignorance. And that's what a lot of the work that we're doing organizationally is about, is cultivating that homegrown in-house movement, information, and knowledge, finding ways to connect to it, to archive it, and to redistribute it in clear ways to our community and our communities who are being very actively turned away from it on myriad levels and through countless different tactics. But it's far more than two ways that they do this. But a couple of the ways is that they disfigure those individuals themselves and the movements that they emerge out of, so that we have, you know, for example, a Brother Jaleel Muntakim and his comrades, and then films like, what's the name of this film that they produced, targeting the realities of that struggle. Was it a Target Zero? I believe that's the name of the propaganda film So we end up getting films such as those. Information gets disseminated that completely disfigures these individuals, their struggles, and that history. And that separates the very people who need the information the most from the realities of what those struggles entailed, why they occurred in the first place, et cetera. And so the political education component is vitally important. One of the ways that we're looking to do that is through what is called ATP, or About the People. About the People is the audiovisual wing of Spirit of Mandela. And Spirit of Mandela, speaking of Brother Jaleel Muntakim, he is one of the movement elders and freedom fighters who really initiated Spirit of Mandela. At the time, from the inside, he was put into solitary confinement behind precisely doing educational work on the inside, doing PE with street families on the inside, and being targeted and sent to the hole for that very reason. So Spirit of Mandela put the U.S. on trial for its genocides back in October 2021 with 5 counts of genocide. And on the shoulders of giants, to quote Brother Sekou Odinga, another warrior and freedom fighter, now grandsister out here, who was also pivotal in formulating Spirit of Mandela and the tribunal. We stood on the shoulders of those giants, charging the U.S. with genocide again, as was done back with the We Charge Genocide petition. But we were able to actually find them guilty of all of those counts, all 5 counts of genocide. And as part of those efforts, we have built About the People as an audiovisual wing to really channel some of this movement work, history, reality, the organizing that goes down on the ground on an everyday basis, to distill some of that as clearly as we can, and in a way that resonates with our Black, Brown, and Indigenous youth in particular, so as to facilitate keeping that lifeline, that vital connective tissue to this movement work, that continuity to the generations that are coming up right now in this atmosphere where everyone is so awash in audiovisual information in particular. You know, we're surrounded by this. We're seeing all of these visuals of the slaughter of Palestinians, for example, just as one example of many wherein the audiovisual mode is so dominant out here, particularly for the youth them. And so that's one way organizationally that we're looking to grow that connection around our freedom fighters' vital information, very grounded relationship to this beast and how to actually mobilize and organize against it concretely.
Can you talk about some of the resources involved with the different projects you're talking about, just so people can check them out, because they mm-hmm. definitely should. And also, again, stressing that importance that you mentioned when it comes to knowledge production, dissemination, and all the other misinformation, disinformation, whatever you want to call it out there, that people still need to also move to action and get involved. That's a very important anecdote. And of course, it does start in a lot of cases with education, as it did with your case. And for a lot of organizers, as part of getting the right access to this history, like you said, it's out there, but yeah, it's not like people are just kind of handing it out. So what are some of the ways people can access these resources?
For one, you can go to spiritofmandela.org. Much of the broader constellation of organizations and efforts that are connected to Spirit of Mandela, including About the People, ATP, as well as the People's Senate, which is the next major phase of Spirit of Mandela moving forward after the tribunal of 2021. Much of that information is on that website or can be accessed through that website. For example, the social media presence of Spirit of Mandela, ATP, People's Senate, etc. So that's one great place to go to connect up. There's a calendar there. We strive to keep that calendar updated so that various activities going on throughout these domestic colonies and the external colonies that relate to people's building the People's Senate can be found on that calendar. And you can also upload the activities that you're doing onto that calendar. And we strongly encourage that heads do that and also fill out the interest form there so that you can get updates in real time about activities as well as sign up for the People's Senate. That would be the absolute most straightforward way to connect with all of these different, you know, movement tributaries, if you will, and activities and meetings and organizing opportunities. You can contact ATP at our Gmail, which is aboutthepeople1312@gmail.com. And the Spirit of Mandela Gmail is spiritofmandela1@gmail.com. So those are a few different ways to connect. About the People is on social media, also has a YouTube channel. And so please subscribe to the YouTube channel to get updates there. And there's a Spirit of Mandela channel on YouTube as well, which among other key videos and resources has the entire tribunal from 2021 broken down into the different tribunal charges. And I would strongly encourage everyone that's peeping this now, that would peep it at any point, if you haven't checked out the tribunal in full, please do yourself a favor and check that out. There's a full transcript that can also be found on the website, the written transcript of the verdict. But if you want to watch it in full, you know, it's a number of hours, but you've got that breakdown there so you can see individual charges, medical apartheid, political imprisonment, environmental racism, etc. And just peep it out as you can, you know, according to what your minutes look like. But those are some of the ways to get connected. But again, I would just strongly implore heads to sign up. You can fill out the interest form that takes a minute or less on the Spirit of Mandela website in the People's Senate section of that website. And then if and when you're ready to be even more involved, to fill out the membership form either as an individual or as an organization. If you're filling it out as an organization, we just need a couple of signatures from members of your organization. And then you can just connect directly with the People's Senate building process in your region. There are roughly 9 regions throughout, you know, Turtle Island and these, you know, these domestic and external colonies, as we're working through on an intercommunal basis, building out these different People's Senate regions so that we can really have grounded representation on a people's basis of the people in real terms, not the people as projected by U.S. slaver hegemonic empire, as though we're all just down for the genocides all day, every day, as though the people of this corporate state, as though we're all just, you know, with this genocide for profit model that we are just being constantly violated through and have been for centuries now in this genocidal process, where, you know, these U.S. slavers are exporting the genocide that they brought to this landmass all across the globe. We need the capacity to forcefully demonstrate that we are not down for that, and to, in a non-genocidal communal way, come together and uplift the work that we're already doing and grow that work so that it's exponentially more effective. That's what the People's Senate will do, inshallah.
It's a very potent and pertinent call to action. And again, it's always important, maybe even more important now than ever, again, in our second Trumpian phase of things. And thanks so much for telling us about that and the importance of all that media work, too, with About the People. What can people expect to see? Like, how do you do that? What you put together, videos, radio shows, or what kind of things can people expect to hear about and learn about?
You don't have to have some sort of encyclopedic knowledge of movement history or anything like that. It's really a question of just being where the people are, being willing to connect on a ground level and document what's going on, and being willing to find creative ways to bring that information, those visuals, that audio, to the people. So, for example, right now, some of the ATP comrades are at an event with some of our comrades at Black Men Build right now, where they're hosting a dialogue with our dear comrade Mike Africa Jr., the son of political prisoners of war, a lifelong MOVE family member and advocate and supporter of political prisoners, including and especially Mumia Abu-Jamal and, of course, his family. And so heads are there to connect and build with those comrades, as well as to document what's going on there, in part because we are putting together a long-form version of a short feature that we did on Mumia called Who is Mumia? And the aim of that is to give just a brief primer on Mumia, his struggle, the broader Mumia movement, and why it's vitally important that we bring that brother home immediately. And so we're building that out into a longer feature. We previously dropped a full feature. Our first installment is called Camp Muntakim, which is focused on Brother Jalil Muntakim and the various movements that he's connected to. You can still peep that out. That is available online. And we would love to screen these works and future works with you at your community center, where you organize, outside, whatever the case may be. So it's a very dynamic, flexible, nimble process that can be engaged on a number of levels. We have a couple of great filmmakers and video editors, and we also have a variety of other just kinds of talents and interests in the mix. So whatever you have to offer, there's room for it, and we constantly need to grow and build our capacity to do this very multifaceted work. So those are just some of the ways. We're always down for screenings. We come through for screenings where we have questions and answers at the end and build. It's really not just about the so-called product of the film. It's really about having some sort of document, a film, a short work. We have something called Ask a OG, which is one of our newer segments, where we get up with movement elders and just connect with them and ask them fundamental questions so that we can share that out in real time and, you know, through these media that people are relating to all the time, you know, whether it be a short clip, a long installment, like music videos. We're putting together a film on the People's Senate. So all of that and more encompasses what ATP is about, because ultimately it's just about connecting with the people and building with them in the clearest way possible and as compellingly as possible, so our youth especially can, you know, continue to pick up the work.
Well, these are a lot of great resources. It's always time to pick up the work. And folks, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guests and a Prison Pipeline Collective member.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
It seems like recently the struggle to take action on climate change has gotten more complicated. And there are a lot of